last year or so, it's been quite a shock. I have seen in the newspapers lots of names, and in fact, just this past week, there was another fellow by the name of Kevin Spacey. Is that right? Yeah. And he's going to be facing all kinds of music, I think, coming up in this week. Lots of well-known people have fallen here. Bill Cosby, absolutely. I couldn't believe it, you know. I grew up with him, seems like, on TV. And it was quite a surprise, probably quite a surprise to a lot of us there. And lots of names. Matt Lauer, we could go on and on. And even our politicians were sometimes involved. And one of our state politicians even committed suicide. I remember Dan Johnson, didn't know him. He was not around here, I don't think, but he got caught up in that, and he even committed suicide. It's just a terrible mess. And I've got an idea that this mess that we're seeing is probably not nearly as big as it really is. It's probably much bigger than what we at this point understand. And so this evening, I want us to think about a little bit basically how God wants men and women to treat one another when it comes to this kind of relationship. And so we're going to be spending a lot of time, most of our time, in the book of Proverbs. And I would encourage you to open up to the book of Proverbs here. And while you're turning, I guess I ought to say this. I want you to know that I am not gunning for anybody today. I don't do that when I preach. I do not do that. I don't think that's right. And I don't believe that there's really a specific need. I don't have a felt need, okay? But this is just a good reminder, because it is in the Bible, that we need to know these things. We need to be reminded of these things as well. I remember when I was 16 years old. We were going to a youth rally, a whole bunch of churches, young people there were going around there, and they had hired a minister to come, and he was going to speak about modest apparel. Didn't know what he was going to be preaching about till we got there. We were all excited to be there, and from my point of view at the age, I thought he was kind of hard on us. He was talking about modest apparel. This was in the 70s. Talking about how that we needed to be more moral and things like that. And I looked around the room and all the kids that were there. And I really didn't think that anybody was dressed inappropriately. I really don't. And yet, I felt like I was being raked over the coals for being, you know, immoral or indecently dressed. And yet we were not. Well, that was his message to us. Again, I'm not coming down on anybody. I don't have any agenda. I just want to be reminded of what Solomon is talking about here. And so we are going to the book of Proverbs. And let me remind you that Proverbs, it's just exactly that. It is a collection of Proverbs. And if you were to read the Proverbs, you would pretty much very quickly realize that there's no real order to this book. It doesn't flow very well. Sometimes it looks like bullet points, and one verse is different from the one right behind it. And so it doesn't necessarily flow very well. Solomon, of course, is the main writer, but many of the Proverbs were not written by him, but rather, he admits, I collected these. These are a collection. And in fact, we don't have all of them that he collected. I think he mentions that he might have collected over 3,000. And we don't have 3,000, but we do have what we have here. And these are the ones that I think are really good for us tonight. One word of caution about the book of Proverbs. We need to remember that a lot of these Proverbs were assembled by Solomon for his sons. Okay? Basically so that his sons would not repeat the same mistakes that he made in his life. this book, because of that, is, shall we say, very male-centric, okay? That doesn't mean that girls, women, are off the hook, that he's just talking to men and women you can check out. That's not the case at all. Pretty much everything that we can talk about here when it's talking about the boys, we can reverse it and say this also applies to the girls, to the ladies, to the teenagers, and make it female-centric just as easily as male-centric, okay? And so while Solomon is warning his sons, I'm saying that you can easily turn it around and use the very same message, the same verses, to warn the daughters, okay, the girls, about what he's talking about. And because of that, you'll see in the Proverbs a lot of verses about boys, don't marry the wrong woman. And you don't see girls, don't marry the wrong husband. It's just male-centric. You can reverse it anytime you want. It's just that he wanted his sons to not make the mistakes that he had made. And if you know very much about Solomon's life, he made plenty of mistakes. And he wants to help his sons avoid that very thing. Now, here's another thing about the Proverbs. They are true, but they're not always true. Got it? They are generally true. And I'm not knocking a proverb here. I'm not being, you know, anti-Bible or anything like that. Don't get me wrong here. That's just the way it is. These are proverbs. Proverbs are generally true. Sometimes, even in the book of Proverbs, you'll find two that contradict. And that is no problem at all. For example, in one area, you'll find a verse that says, do not answer a fool according to his folly. Two verses later, answer a fool according to his folly. So what am I to do? Do I do it, answer it, or not answer it? Well, it depends on the situation. Depends on what's going on. And your wisdom will decide whether you're going to answer him according to his folly or not according to his folly. There's a lot of different ways of organizing the book of Proverbs, but basically the book of Proverbs is designed to say, don't ruin your life. You can ruin your life in so many different ways. Those of you who are in the medical field are familiar with this very thick book. It's an ICD-10 book, and it is that thick, and it is all full of small printed material, how many ways we can die and how many sicknesses we can get. And Proverbs here, Solomon is saying, there are so many ways for you to ruin your life, and you need to listen to my words, listen to wisdom, so that you do not destroy your life. And so here he is, and if you've got your Bible open, go to Proverbs chapter 4 and begin at verse 23. Proverbs 4 and verse 23. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet, and let all of your ways be established. Do not turn to the right nor to the left. Remove your foot from evil. One version says, give careful thought to the paths of your feet. There was a time in my life when it was my house. It was so full of junk that it was dangerous to walk in there. And Debbie, do not tell Debbie that I said this. She would be so embarrassed. We couldn't walk through our bedroom because there were boxes everywhere and stuff everywhere, and we almost had to have a flashlight to get through our bedroom. sometimes you've got to get rid of some of the clutter for your own safety so that you can walk carefully without falling. Here in the book, and it's really in the book of Solomon too, Song of Solomon, he says, guard your heart. Guard your heart. And I'm telling you, that is key to everything. Guard your heart. If we were going to say it through the words of Jesus, I would say, let's go to the Sermon on the Mount. And he says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And it's all about the heart, don't you see? Pure in heart. We've got to guard our hearts. And basically he's saying here, don't fall in love with the wrong person. Or really he's saying, don't fall in love with the wrong thing. And we're going to talk about the wrong persons today, but we need to understand that he's also talking about your work ethic, your falling in love with things, materialism, if you will, and power and things like that. But largely we're going to be talking about adultery. And he gets a message across by talking about adultery, but the root cause behind the pain here is this. You fell in love with the wrong thing. You weren't paying attention. I'm still in chapter 4. Your eyes were not kept straight ahead. You were not watching where you were going. And you got in trouble. And Solomon knew what it was all about. He knew what it meant when you were distracted. Does anybody remember the name of Solomon's mom? Yeah, Bathsheba. Does anybody remember that story? We don't need to go there, do we? Here was an example of a man who got distracted. And all kinds of problems came from David's affair with Bathsheba. You know, this book is very old. It really is. It's ancient. And it's been read for thousands of years, and yet the same old problems are still described. And it seems just totally up to date, doesn't it? The same problems that they had 3,000 or plus years ago are the very same ones that we still have today. And basically, we're not paying attention to where we're going. We're not paying attention to what's around us. We're not keeping our eyes focused straight ahead. And we're not focusing on the right things. And so Solomon uses chapters 5 and 6 and 7 with a little bit of a break there in chapter 6 to tell how it's so easy to become entrenched. Now, he's talking mainly to his sons, okay? We've already talked about that. He's talking to his boys, and he's using an illustration of adultery. And he shows them, and thereby shows us today, as we're reading what he told his sons, how easily we can ruin our lives. And do remember this, when he says, my sons, we can flip it and we could add the word daughters just as easily. Okay? But look at chapter 5 and verse 3. He says, for the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. Well, it all starts with words, doesn't it? Her lips drip honey. Sweet words, kind words, flattering words. Words that sound so good. You know, that's where it all starts. Think about what you've seen at work, maybe. And maybe, I'm assuming you're like me, you've seen things happened at work that should not have happened. And it kind of starts with words. Men are easily wooed. We really are. We love it. Women, they don't like to be manipulated. But men love to be manipulated. We really do. And I'm making big confessions to as if you didn't know already. It's so easily done. Watch this in the next week or so at work. If some cute little thing comes up to a guy and she's got this jar and she can't open it, you know, and she's saying, you know, this is too hard. You're big and strong. Why don't you open it? Well, that guy's going to take that. And I don't care if he's got to take an axe to it, a hatchet to it, a hammer to it. That's going to be open. That lid's coming off. And she'll say, oh, you're our hero. And he'll say, yeah, it's nothing. Men love that kind of stuff. The greatest words that women want to hear are, I love you. The greatest words that men want to hear are, I need you. I admire you. You are so great. And that's what men want to hear. And that's why over there in Ephesians chapter 5, a man is told to love his wife, while the woman is not told to love her husband, rather to respect her husband. Why? Because that's really what he's wanting anyway. And so what do? When we find ourselves being enchanted by some cute little thing at work, we'll say. Some words that are dripping honey from these lips that look, how do you describe it there? Silky as oil, something like that. What do when that happens? I hope that red flags immediately are hauled up. This is where you've got to be very, very careful. Look at chapter 5 and verse 8. This is what Solomon says to do. Remove your way far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. It's distance. We've got to put some distance between this person. Because if you don't, you're going to be in trouble. And we'll see this in just a minute. It's distance. Paul had a son in the faith named Timothy. We know him very well. Paul wrote to Timothy, and he did not say, when you are confronted with a youthful lust, look down on your wrist and you will find that little bracelet that says WWJD and ask yourself, what would Jesus do? He does not say, Timothy, when you are faced with these things, you be strong. You know what to do. Don't give in. You hang in there and you say no. That's not what he said. He says, run, flee youthful lust. Get away from this person. That's what he's saying. That's what Paul says. And that's what Solomon says right here as well. And by the way, if any man here is thinking, I'm not running, I can handle it. I can handle anybody trying to seduce me. It will not be a problem in my life. You are wrong. My friend, you're wrong. You are not that strong. You are not as strong as you think. You need to do like Paul said to Timothy. Get out of that situation. Run for your life. And so that's what we should do. So why do you call it youthful lust? Well, you know, it's youthful. I guess older folks either don't have them or they're too tired to fool with anything. I'm trying to be funny here. But you understand what I mean. Listen, old people lust too. How do I know? Because I see it every day. Work in a nursing home. Go to a nursing home. Talk to them. Yeah, they do. They do. Trust me on that. If they're not acting on it, it's because they don't have the opportunity or if they just don't have the energy, okay? But Paul says, run. He says, get out of there, flee youthful lust. Another verse says, flee fornication. And so we can so easily become enchanted with sweet words, soft voices, things like that. I like the songs that we sing sometimes. It says, how shall the young secure their hearts? And I almost want to say, how come you didn't write another verse that says, how shall the middle-aged and the seniors guard their hearts? Because it's the very same way, through the Word. And so we need to be aware, and those of us who are middle-aged and seniors, we know that we still are tempted in these areas as well. Another song says, it's a prayer to God, says, remember not the sins of my youth. All right, that's what I want. But I also want to say in verse 2 and verse 3, remember not the sins of my middle age, and then do not remember the sins of my senior years as well. I need them all covered, you know what I mean? You want to know how to be happy in this world that is very sex-oriented? Listen, I think this is a good verse right here. Like what you've got, want what you have. Like what you've got, want what you have. Look at verse 15. He says, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Now, at this point, we're talking a lot of metaphors, okay? It's innuendos. The next verse doesn't get much better. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad? I'm not going to say it. I had to start to, but if you don't know what that is, see me later and I'll tell you. Should your fountains be dispersed, streams of water in the street, let that stuff just go everywhere. It's not for everybody. It's for the wife. It's for the wife. Let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Now, that doesn't mean your young wife. That means the wife that you married when you were young and now she's older, okay? As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you with at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, remember he's talking to sons, but we could flip it. Why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? Some of you are thinking, I had no idea that kind of stuff was in the Bible. But it's there. It's there. And I'm glad it is. Because we in this world, in America, we need some help. And we need some guidance. Because right now, we're kind of falling apart, morally speaking. And someone who doesn't walk, when you're working out there in the world, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Last year, my favorite doctor, Dr. Arthur Henderson, did you know him, Arthur Henderson? Oh, he's my favorite doctor. He retired. Now I've got somebody I don't even know. But we were talking about something like this, and I don't even remember how it got started, but he told me about a psychological study, and what they had was some very beautiful women. These were pageant women, okay, that beautiful. They would walk by little babies, and the babies, when they would see the beautiful women, would turn their heads and follow. But then they would, and, you know, who wants to be in the next group, you know, but there were some others, and the babies did not track them, the less beautiful, we'll say it that way. And I thought that was kind of interesting, put it in the back of my head. And did you go to the mall, maybe? I avoid it at all costs, and yet at the same time, I have been. And sometimes the most fun you can have at the mall is watching people, right? And I saw, I'm not kidding, a young man, he's probably a teenager, his dad in his 40s, and his dad in his 70s. And every one of them, all three, their heads turned in unison to stare at a pretty girl when they walked by, when she walked by. Well, be careful about that. I know that wouldn't work out too good at my house. Have you ever heard somebody say something totally stupid? Here it is. Somebody might say, oh, I'm married. I'm on a diet, but that doesn't mean I can't look at the menu. Are you serious? You're going to say that in front of your wife? And I have heard people say that. And I was thinking, and you're going to go to sleep, and she's going to know where you're sleeping, too. You are running a risk. Don't you dare say that. How would you like it if your wife starts gawking at every muscled up 25-year-old that walked by her? You'd be upset. I would be, too. We don't do that. It's just wrong on so many different levels. You know, it's hard in our affluent society to be satisfied with what we have. It really is. I typed up this sermon on I think it's four-year-old computer. Boo. I want a new one. Not going to get one, but I want one because the old one now is 4 years old. And there's better stuff out there. You can change computers, but the menu is not even allowed, okay? We're not there anymore. That's not going to happen. Paul talks about this so many times. Whatever state you find yourself in, you learn to be content. Want what you have. Love what you got. We need to do that. Now, in chapter 6, how much time do I have? In chapter 6, Solomon takes a little break here to show, I think, maybe that we're not just talking about sexual sins. And adultery, that can change your life, ruin your life. But there are some other things that can ruin your life as well. And over here in chapter 6, co-signing. Oh, boy. Ever been asked to co-sign? I have. Be careful. That can ruin your life. You co-sign, and he says, verse 1, chapter 6, if you become surety for your friend, if you have shaken hands and pledged for a stranger, you are snared by the words of your own mouth. And so he says, deliver yourself from that. Don't you see that? He talks about being careful about working. You need to do the work. Do not be lazy. Work and do what you're supposed to do. Have a good ethic, work ethic. Do what you're supposed to do. And you know, it's one thing, and I've seen this because I'm a parent and I've had kids. It's one thing when you are wrestling with a 2-year-old sitting there at the table, and he's been there for 2 hours, and it is a tug of war between you and him trying to decide how many beans are going to be eaten in the next 2 hours. And they're holding it down, and they're not going to budge, and you're not going to budge. It's one thing for a 2-year-old to be doing that, but it is quite another thing when you are a teenager and you refuse to do your homework and study so that you can become intelligent enough that later on you can graduate and get a decent job and make a living. If you're still doing that like a 2-year-old when you're 17, that's a problem. That's a problem. You're not growing up. In a few weeks, yay, taxes. I don't like taxes. I'll be honest with you. And yet I know I have to do them. I have to do it. And I have never walked hand in hand with Debbie down the street with my little letter, with my check, whistling zippity-doo-dah and drop it in there and pay my bill. I hate every minute of it. But it's required. Have to do it. So go ahead and do it and get it off the list. Get it off your back. Not thrilled about it, but you know you've got to do it. And Solomon says here in chapter 6, don't be lazy. Don't lay down. You work. Do what you're supposed to do. Keep your head looking forward. Why forward? Because if you're going backwards and sideways, you're going to get confused and you may very well fall. Look at verse 23 of chapter 6. For the commandment is a lamp and the law is light. Reproof of instructions are the way of life to keep you from the evil woman. Another version, your neighbor's wife. From the flattering tongue of a seductress. Do not lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids. And once again, please notice that he's going after his sons again. It's written to the boys. Because she can't draw you away with her beauty unless you've already noticed it. You've already lusted. And so he says, guys, you started it. You saw her beauty. You lusted after it. And now she's going to draw you away. And then the opportunity came along. And then her eyelids start fluttering and all of this stuff, you see. And once again, please notice that it's the way that she's talking to you. It all starts with verbal stuff, talking it out. And she's looking at you. And by the way, you know, men can be a smooth talker too. We've all seen that. The Bible says, watch the words. Women also know that the way a man can look at her can be a very powerful thing. You go through the bookstores, and it's almost comical. I have never read one of these. I always looked at these as chick flicks anyway, and pretty much I don't read that much anyway. Pretty much just looking at books of nonfiction. But when you look at some of the love stories and the pictures on the front, what do you see? It's really wild. There's this beautiful woman looking lustfully at this very handsome man. And they're looking deeply into each other's eyes. And that's where it starts. It all starts there. And then there are some consequences. There always are consequences. We need to understand that. It will catch up. You will be found out. There are consequences. Look at verse 27. Can a man take fire into his bosom? Can you see that? Take a fire and hug it. And his clothes not be burned? Oh yes, they will be burned. Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent. And so Solomon takes his sons through this mental scenario. And in chapter 7, there is this woman. And she's looking for someone. And she says that, I was looking for you. But that's not really the case. She was looking for anybody. It just happened to be you that came along, you see. You know, these commercials. They get me sometimes. The commercial will say, we have made this product. And it is specifically for you. This will help you, your life. And it was, they spent all that money on research just for me. No, they didn't. They did it for everybody. But they're going to say for you. And really what they're after is not fewer wrinkles on your face. They're looking to get your money. That's really what they want. Now, I'm not arguing about it, you know, but just realize that that's what they're really after. They're really after the money. And right here, this woman is looking for someone. You know, when King David did his little famous walk on top of the roof, he's just ambling around, not really having anywhere to go, just walking. that never resulted in anything good. Certainly didn't with Bathsheba. And the result of that ambling around led to the affair with Bathsheba. It led to murder. It led to treason and shame for the entire nation. And specifically with David. These little aimless strolls rarely go well. Let me talk to the young people here. I know that you've been listening. Who wouldn't listen to this, right? Even though you might not want to admit it. Let me tell you why parents get upset or worried, and they annoy you by asking where you're going and when you're going to be back and what are you going to do. And I understand why it bothers the young people, because they really want to just go out, hang out with their friends. I understand that, and that's fine. But when the answer comes back and they said, well, I'm going out with so-and-so, and I don't know what we're going to do. We'll find something, I'm sure. That never ends well. It could end very tragically. And that's why parents get a little bit upset. Right? Things can go so wrong so quickly. And Solomon knew that. And that's why he's really talking straight with his boys. And maybe even straighter than we care to hear from a pulpit, okay? Because this is a little unusual. The story starts out in chapter 7. And here's a guy. And he's just walking, and he's not really got a destination in mind. He's just walking aimlessly. And he winds up on a street that he doesn't belong on. He has no business on this street. But look at chapter 7 and verse 7. He says, I saw among the simple. I perceived among the youth a young man devoid of understanding. And right here, I don't know it, but I've got an idea that when he was reading this, he was looking right into the eyes of Rehoboam. Young man full of no understanding. And if you know the history, you know why. And he says in the next verse, he was passing along the street near her corner. Remember we talked about distance there? He's going in the direction of danger. He's not going away from danger. He's not trying to flee. He is going towards it. He's going towards your house. Do you see his mind is already made up? And he took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark light. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. And this woman's got a very nice speech here. In fact, watch this. I'm at verse 14. She wants him to know, I go to church too. You go to church? I go to church. Look at this. I have peace offerings with me. Today, I was just there. I paid my vows. Oh, well, you're a church-going person. Good, good. Do you see how all of this can be used to lower your guards? And we can get in trouble so very easily. She also says that she's been looking for him, and that this is going to feel great. It's going to be so pleasant. Look, she describes it. Look at verse 17. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloe, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. For my husband, he's gone. He is not at home. He is gone on a long journey. And he's taking a bunch of money with him, so he'll be gone a while. Wow. It can happen so easily. And all of this is going to lead to broken hearts broken lives and a very painful, ruined life. Do you know why people do things like this? Because it feels good for a while. Our country is absolutely being ruined by drugs. It really is. Nancy Reagan came out with this idea that did not work, worth 2 cents. You know, just say no. That was 50 years, well, 40 anyway, long time. And we have as big a problem or more now than anything else. Now, we also have more drugs, okay? Some of the drugs that we have today weren't even thought of when Nancy Reagan said, just say no. People who take meth, have you ever seen someone who, what they look like when they take meth? A lot of it. There is nothing worse than meth to ruin your brain, your teeth, your face. You will look like a wreck. And doctors can look around the room and they can tell. You're not here, you know, talking about meth. Because it's so obvious. Why would they do that? Because initially, it must be good. I'll have to take their word on that. But look what it does in the end. This woman here, she's saying, oh, we're going to have a good time. Husband's gone. No consequences. It'll be fun. No one will know. And that sounds very familiar because that's about how every sin that we commit, that's the thinking behind it. And so in verse 21, with her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck in his liver as a bird hastens to the snare. He did not know it was going to take his life. Wow. Once again, this guy would not have gone down that street which he did not belong had he not already made up his mind. He knew where she was. He knew what she looked like. And he had already lusted. And he already had his mind made up. He was going. And it was just like an ox to the slaughterhouse. Just like a deer about to be impaled in his liver by an arrow. Like a bird caught in a snare. It's too late. And he's dead. It cost him his life. And notice, please, the more she talks, the more he just gets dumber and dumber and dumber. Stupider. Is that a word? You know what I'm talking about. You see, we've got to be prepared. We've got to, really, we've got to put up some walls. I hate to talk about a wall. We've got to put up some walls for ourselves. All right? His big mistake was in verse 28. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her path. I think I said verse 28, I meant 25. And ladies, let me say this, because I can imagine that some of you are getting really, really upset at me right now. Please don't. Notice that we can turn this around. We could have said, oh, it's the man and instead of the woman. Okay, we could say that. It's just that Solomon chose to talk to his boys about this, and that's really all it is. Okay, so please don't be mad at me or be mad at the writer for the way that it was stated. All right, he's talking to his boys, and therefore he's got to talk about a woman who would be seducing her. But it could be the other way around, where a woman would be seduced by a man. And really, in a way, you could make a case that it might be even be more dangerous, because men are bigger, more powerful, and sometimes men don't take no for an answer. Okay? And next thing you know, we've got another Bill Cosby on our hands. So that can be very dangerous. Let me sum this up here. I want us to go to John, 1 John chapter 2. And this is one that you know very well. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16. For all that is in the world, lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And this gets back to the very beginning of the lesson, where I said, where is your heart? We're talking about pure in heart. You need to be pure in heart. Guard your heart, Solomon says. We've got to be very comfortable with knowing that our heart is secure. Put up a wall around the heart so that these things can be avoided. And Solomon wanted his sons to not make these tragic mistakes that he had made and his dad had made years before. The last verse of the chapter finds Solomon saying to his sons, her house is the way to hell, and it leads to death. I don't want that. You don't want that. None of us want that. You need to know something else here. Hundreds of years down the road, Solomon had a descendant. They called him, he liked to call himself the son of David. I guess he could have called himself the son of Solomon too. But Jesus came along and he points us to his way, a new way, a better way, one that is famous for being pure in heart, and all the other things that go with it that you can read about at other places. That's the best way. He says, I have come that you may have an abundant life. Now this evening, if you need to come to Jesus, I would encourage you to do that. Now, if you come forward, it might be risky. Somebody might be thinking, oh, yeah, we know what that, you know. No, no, no. Do not think that. Do not go there if someone should go forward, please. But I can imagine that because of the sensitivity, and I appreciate this, and you may rise up and say, he'll never preach again here. I don't know. But this was a serious thing, and I understand. But if we can help you in some way, I would encourage you to come as we stand and sing that song.